I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like Madison Computer Works and SNR Remodeling. Joining me now, Associate Editor of the Capital Times, John Nichols. Merry Christmas, John.
Merry Christmas.
Quite a Christmas present for the plutocrats, including the Koch brothers. They got quite a Christmas gift.
There's nobody in the grifter class that isn't celebrating today.
You know, there's that other Koch brother, William Koch.
Yeah, the guy who does the cowboy stuff.
Right, he's like a wine. He resells wine or something. Have you seen his son Wyatt?
No.
Oh. Oh, you've got a, I think it was Rachel Maddow that did a piece on how the estate tax is going to affect this really, really nerdy kid who's in a lawsuit right now. He's trying to get his ex-fiance's $250,000 engagement ring back. But he designed shirts that you can wear out on your yacht. Okay.
Well, you need them.
No, seriously. If you do anything today, just Google Wyatt Koch. Wait till you see this guy. And he put something about himself up on Instagram, and he did very well yesterday as well.
I think it's Wyatt's dad, who's the guy who bought a ghost town in Colorado.
Oh.
And hires actors to dress up like cowboys and Indians.
Nice.
So that he can go out, you know, and walk around.
Oh, sure.
And have it be just like the Old West.
Oh.
And okay. So I actually think something like that.
Well, it's interesting because the Koch brothers have created quite a few ghost towns over the years.
They've done very well with that. But I just think that this notion of, and you can find profiles of the guy anyway, but the notion of this is, I think at that point, that's an example of somebody who has more money than they need.
I think that's true.
And I think probably designing yacht shirts, maybe more money than you need.
Well, I think this is the same guy that got ripped off. He buys exquisite wine, really old wine, and somebody just basically sold him grape juice for $400,000.
What? There's a problem with that?
Oh,
my God.
All right, you know. So yesterday, the White House, victory lap. Listen to this.
You're living up to everything I thought you would. You're one heck of a leader. This is one of the great privileges of my life, to stand here on the White House lawn with the President of the United States, who I love and appreciate so much.
You know, I have to say, the first part of that statement, I agree with.
More or less. Yeah.
He's lived up exactly to what I thought he was going to
do. Yeah, not a big surprise there. But you know what I like about that? You know, I mean, people use lots of different phrases to describe that. But I really think, you know, we don't get enough examples, you know, like dictionary quality examples that you could put a copy of that video, you know, right into the online Merriam-Webster for the word snivelling. Because that was 100% prime choice snivelling.
I was 15 years old when Orrin Hatch got elected to the U.S. Senate. He beat a very prominent senator named Frank Moss.
Who was a pretty good guy. Yeah.
Right. So this guy's got a 40-year career, and this is how he wants to be remembered? I mean, Orrin Hatch at one time was I've never agreed with his politics, but a pretty serious legislator. And no
Orrin
dignity
Hatch.
Left. None.
None. No, it's gone. Well, because he's terrified of being, you know, because Utah's got an incredibly out there Republican Party, and he's terrified of being, you know, like bumped out by his own party.
Well, isn't he retiring?
Supposedly, but, you know, at this point, who knows? That didn't sound like a retiring speech.
No, it didn't. Well, let's listen. Speaking of retiring, John.
We would not be standing here today if it wasn't for you.
Paul Ryan just said, how good was that? This is a...
Paul Ryan. He was there, too, singing the praises. Let's see if I can find Paul Ryan. I think
This has been a year of extraordinary accomplishment for the Trump administration.
Exquisite presidential leadership.
The president laid out his vision for a tax cut that would be a middle-class miracle. And that's exactly what the Congress passed today.
And we're going to make this the greatest presidency that we've seen, not only in generations, but maybe ever.
Paul Ryan just said, how good was that?
I mean, honestly... You know, this would make Kim Jong-un blush. You know? I mean, it's...
You know, it's got that... It does have that sort of... The sort of whiff of the authoritarian state, right? You know? It's like, you didn't compliment me quite as enthusiastically as I wanted you.
Well, I assume they all saw the Gorsuch story this week and how Gorsuch's nomination almost got pulled because...
Not enough sniveling. But, you know, the interesting thing about that, though, is... That, you know, it's good news. Ryan prevailed, right? Wisconsinites should be proud because their guy, you know, got the presidential shout out, right? Paul Ryan just said, how good is that? See, because you get the presidential shout out, that's the confirmation that you are the favored errand boy.
Well, the errand boy, there's just so much to talk about today. But
instead of congressman, they should start calling him. Capital Associates, like you're an associate at Walmart.
Very good. Kind of the way Scott Walker sounded when he answered the phone for what he thought was David Koch. Remember
junior
the mid-level deputy, manager at Shopko?
Deputy assistant manager at Shopko.
All right, here we go.
Are you committed to running for re-election to your House seat and for Speaker?
Yeah, look, so I'm not going anywhere anytime soon. On questions on way down the line, I'll address those way down the line.
But you haven't decided to run for re-election yet?
I haven't even, it's not even 2018 yet. So that's something my wife and I always discuss later in the campaign year.
Oh, yeah, later in the campaign year, yeah.
It's funny how much money he's raised just to help the discussion along.
You grew up in that district.
I was there yesterday.
What are you hearing about, you know, people possibly running for that seat?
Well, there are people running for the seat.
Well, I understand on the Democratic side. I understand that. But by all appearances, Paul Ryan's getting ready to bolt and get really rich.
Well, there is that discussion going on. And if he does, then Robin Voss is... You know, clearly at the ready to make that leap.
Oh, please run.
Yeah, I know.
Please.
It's a beautiful thought.
Please.
Right?
You know, remember Congressman David Prosser?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It would be like Robin Voss, the popcorn guy, versus the iron worker, maybe. You know, that could be an interesting competition. What do you do for a living? I make popcorn.
I build skyscrapers.
Yeah, I build stadiums and stuff. It'd just be an interesting debate. I don't know where it would end up. Or even the other candidate in the Democratic side who is a school board member and has been involved in education. You know what I mean? No matter what, Robin Voss comes out the bottom line on that list. But he would not get it clean. There'd be a primary.
Oh, we have Paul Nealon
already in it, right?
We have the white nationalist Paul Nealon running.
Yeah, that's a really, really unappealing prospect. And there might be a few others because, you know, it is a gerrymandered seat. If you can get it, you know, your chances of holding it for a while are not so bad. But the interesting thing is that my mother had a great line. And just with her, you know, 86-year-old clarity, she said, I was asking her about Paul Ryan. I said, what are people, because she lives in Burlington. I said, well, what are people thinking about Paul Ryan? And she said, I think people are on to him.
Boy, I hope so.
Oh, but I think that's the underpinning of why he might quit. You know, I'm not saying he will quit. I think that's a complex thing for him. And I actually, weirdly enough, think he likes being a congressman, but doesn't like being speaker. So, you know, there's a lot going on, and I would not rule anything out. But
has anyone ever gone and left the speakership and then just gone to be a pedestrian member of Congress?
It's not common. You know, I don't know. I'd have to think back on it. I suspect there's an example, but it is usually a job that you either retire or are invited to retire by the voters. And I think this is the situation. My suspicion is that, you know, when the ghosts visit Scrooge on Christmas Eve, right? I suspect that the ghost that visits Paul Ryan is Tom Foley.
Yes.
Not everybody will get that one.
Well, better than Denny Hastert.
Well, that technically Denny, you know, is a more complex case. Yeah. So, you know, and besides, with all due respect, Denny wasn't in charge of anything.
So let me ask you, you know, we laugh about all this, but you wrote a book, People Get Ready.
Yeah.
And this tax bill, I bet you're going to be ready with an answer for this. How does this tax bill represent the changing workplace in the United States of America?
It's literally, you're right, I'm jumping to answer it. This is literally, if you laid out exactly what needs to be done for the United States to be a player in the 21st century economy, and really even for American society to progress in a way that would keep the United States kind of in the game internationally, if you wrote out everything you need to do and then did the exact opposite, that's what this bill is. It's the exact opposite of what you need to do. Because this bill has within it some incredibly, just flat out dangerous things for the future of the economy. I'll give you a good example. There, in addition to massive tax breaks for corporations, which, by the way, you know, in a globalized economy where you can move goods very easily from incredibly low-wage economies, here's the deal. If you give American companies massive tax breaks, like they've got more money, they can invest in the U.S. They may even have a little incentive to invest in the U.S. But the U.S., where you have, you know, at least some wage standards, not great, not what they once were, but some standards, there's still if you've got all this excess money, it's still more attractive to invest in a place where you don't have to pay people much at all or follow environmental regulations and all sorts of other things. So just giving corporations a lot more money doesn't do good for wages or for real growth in America. Secondly, they have a write-off in this. It makes it really, really easy to write off investments in new equipment. And Sly, I would just ask you, what do you think?
Rosie the Robot.
That's exactly. New equipment in this time. If you go, and when we wrote People Get Ready, we were looking at the future of the economy. If you go to conferences of corporations where they're talking about the future, what they're going to do, do you know what they talk about all the time? It's robots, automation. They literally put up, you know, videos and you know, like slideshows of how to do a factory with virtually no workers.
General Electric literally has an ad campaign espousing this sort of thing. I mean, they've got a little girl who's lazy as a kid, and she figures out how to automate everything in his hand.
Yeah.
I mean, they're literally proud of that. Let me play Elizabeth Warren here.
Corporate CEOs have already told us what they're going to do with this money. I'll give you an example. Home Depot, right after the Senate passed the tax bill a couple of weeks ago, Home Depot CEO is interviewed and said, so what are you going to do with all of this money that Home Depot has, because they're going to do really well on this? Was it, we're going to raise wages for our employees? No. Was it, we're going to hire more employees at the Home Depot stores? No. Was it, we're going to build more Home Depots across America? No. They said, what we're going to do is we're going to do stock buybacks. In other words, we're going to use whatever money comes in to pump up the price of our stock. That works really well for CEOs, and it works really well for wealthy investors. That's what the game is about for these guys. What they care about is getting this money in so they can boost their stock prices. And the fact that hardworking families across this country are paying for that giveaway to these giant corporations, to these zillionaires, that's the part that really hurts here.
She's the great explainer in chief.
She did it very well. And the only counsel I'd give, though, is that in addition to everything she said there, I suspect that this tax bill will lead to a flurry of international investment by U.S. companies. And she's right. In addition to the stock buybacks, there's a lot of potential here that this will keep the stock market up, that the stock market will stay up pretty well into 2018. And if that's the only measure you've got, then you're doing fine, you know, right? Stock's doing good, blah, blah, blah. But remember that stocks go up now when American companies lay off Americans and move production overseas. You want to watch a company stock go up? Watch them announce a lot of factory closings.
Stand by.
And so that's not necessarily good for Americans.
No, it hasn't. And it's been so frustrating that, frankly, the national media doesn't cover economics. They don't cover labor rights. They don't cover any of this stuff. And then they wonder why, when I hear some of these national reporters and hosts ask Democrats who are perfectly progressive, they come on like, what's your message? What's your message? And
that's,
I thought to myself, you know, Sherrod Brown's been talking about this message for a very long time. You just don't cover him.
Well, and you actually treat it as if it's irrational.
Correct.
I mean, that's the most important thing to understand. For the last 25 years in this country, our media elites have treated arguments for investment in America, planning in America, building an American economy that could compete with the Germans and with other folks.
Right.
They treat that as irrational. And then they say, how come we can't keep up with other countries?
Right. But two of the worst are Richard Haass and Mike Barnicle. Absolutely horrible people. Stand by. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at SlysOffice.com.
Hi there. My name is Ishmael Ozan, and many of you know me as the Dane County District Attorney, but I am also a husband and a father of two young girls. Today, I am asking you to make the choice my wife and I made to not use physical punishment with our children. Many of us are not aware that over 16 years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics urged doctors to recommend that parents not use physical punishment on their children. Today, over 100 years of research on children and families supports this recommendation. Look, well-meaning parents may use physical discipline intending to teach their children to make good choices, but we now know that physical discipline actually leads to more disobedience and aggressive behaviors in children. We all want what is best for our kids. Today, we now know what is best for kids is parenting based on respect, mutual understanding, and logic, rather than fear of physical pain. Please join me in learning more about positive parenting and creating a violence-free home.
Paid for by the Dane County District Attorney's Office with support from UW Health American Family Children's Hospital.
Welcome back to SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like our union supporters locally, Madison Firefighters Local 311, Madison Teachers Incorporated, and Teamsters Local 695. John Nichols with us. So, you know, we're at a potentially very, very, very dangerous moment. But before I get to that, I'm remiss because I didn't get a chance to play Mike Pence.
Thank you for seeing through the course of this year an agenda that truly is restoring this country. You've spurred an optimism in this country that's setting records. I'm deeply humbled as your vice president to be able to be here. I want to thank you, Mr. President. I want to thank you for speaking on behalf of and fighting every day for the forgotten men and women of America.
You think he got beat up in the locker room? What happened with Mike Pence?
It's a tough call. You know, I mean, it may just be the fact that, you know, he really wanted to become a politician, and he came out and ran for Congress a couple times and got beat, and then had to, you know, kind of be a toady for the Koch brothers and other people for a decade. You know, the bottom line is that he wasn't a very successful politician. It appears nobody likes him. This is the funny thing is, you know, it's like kind of an incredible situation. And so maybe he's trying as hard as he can. But aside from that last reference to America, I was wondering what country he was talking about. Right? You know, he actually mentioned America because he's talking about this wave of optimism. You know, have you seen the polling?
I have.
He said people don't necessarily think the country's headed in the right direction.
No, no, and it isn't just liberals.
No, in fact, the weird thing about it is that Mike Pence gets up there and says, "Oh, wave of optimism sweeping across America," and yet if you even listen to right wing television and talk radio, you know what they do every day? They're like, "Things are really awful. There's a war on Christmas." You know?
All right, let's. You know, I can't say that Senator Mark Warner is my favorite senator. I don't dislike him, but I will say, if you know, when all is said and done, this could be a pretty pivotal moment in the holding Russia and Donald Trump accountable for what happened in 2016.
Any attempt by this president to remove Special Counsel Mueller from his position or to pardon key witnesses in any effort to shield them from accountability or shut down the investigation would be a gross abuse of power and a flagrant violation of executive branch responsibilities and authorities. These truly are red lines.
You've said in the past that on this issue of collusion, you've seen smoke, but not fire. Is that still the case?
I think more and more this picture is coming into view. I think some of the comments that I made literally months ago, I would amend those comments in terms of where we stand today.
Whoa. That he's with John Harwood there in that second clip.
He's essentially saying, you know, I've seen stuff now.
Yep.
Believe. And interestingly enough, he's been part of what so far has been the most functional investigation at the congressional level,
right?
Attempt in the Senate. He's, I think, very worried. I think really what he was telegraphing there was to his Republican colleagues: I want to keep working with you. I mean, weirdly enough, I don't want you to get derailed into this PR spin that the Trump people are trying to do about, you know, other issues and things like that. So I think that there was a practical purpose to it. There was also this, you know, kind of more jarring message to the American people. You know, you should really, that we really are in sort of a push and pull here on whether.
Don't fall asleep over the holidays.
Well, yeah. But there's one other thing, and this would be my only criticism on that thing.
Oh, you always find something to pick at, John.
A little picking, yeah. Eric, if I might. When you say gross violation, you know, complete, you know, ban abuse of the executive branch, red line, I really wish they would just take it that one final step and say an impeachable offense.
Well, it is interesting you say that. Before we get to that, I want to play one more clip from Warner. And he's getting into something that you've had your eye on for a very long time.
We have heard a host of rumors, and rumors oftentimes coming from the press, of the president's activities because he wasn't able to be banked by many of the American banks, of banking through Deutsche Bank, and that there were Russian dollars that were in some mirror trading and helping the banks to back some of those Deutsche Bank loans. Just from a plain counterintelligence standpoint, that would raise... set off a lot of alarm bells because of the fear of potentially being compromised or having undue influence.
You know, the whole Deutsche Bank thing and their activities with all this, I think Donald Trump is more frightened of that than anything else.
Two words. Wilbur Ross. Right. Just keep telling people. The Secretary of Commerce... the United States is a 79-year-old guy who literally falls asleep at events, right? I mean, it's Wilbur Ross. There's not a lot of arguments for his dynamism as a figure, right? So you're like, why is Wilbur Ross the Secretary of Commerce of the United States of America? Because he was the guy who bailed Trump out when Trump would go bankrupt, because Trump is a lousy businessman who goes bankrupt a lot. When it got harder and harder to bail Trump out, it's very interesting, right around that time, Wilbur Ross goes down and buys the Bank of Cyprus in sort of collaboration with people from Deutsche Bank. And, you know, are not that hard to put together, Sly.
No, they're not. And now we know that the FBI, clearly onto Trump. Of course, the American public didn't know this, but the FBI clearly onto Trump. They go to him in the middle of the campaign, and they tell him, you got to be careful. Russia's trying to infiltrate campaigns, and they're kind of playing it coy. And do you think that Donald Trump divulged the fact that he had all these meetings, or that his staff had all these meetings? No, he didn't. He wasn't being a good player during the situation. They're trying to play that they're naive. They weren't naive.
Of course not. They hired Flynn. Right. It's like, forget about the FBI coming to tell him. As best we know, Barack Obama said, hey, stay away from Flynn. He's a bad guy. And Trump's like, oh, he's a bad guy? Wow. I think I'll make him my national security advisor.
Okay, so we've got House Intelligence Chairman Devin Nunes, who's recused himself from the Trump investigation.
Yeah.
Starting some lawless group of people that are now trying to investigate the Justice Department and the FBI over the dossier, which is a complete non sequitur. And now I read this morning in the paper that the Justice Department under Jeff Sessions may be trying to go after the Uranium One deal. I mean, they're throwing everything up against the wall.
Well, they're desperate and they're scared. And Nunes, it's like, we keep talking about like junior deputy assistant associate at Walmart or whatever. Nunes, I mean, he's like, is there a lower level of public service than you get from Devin Nunes? I mean, this guy he must wake up in the morning.
Yeah, Glenn Grothman.
Glenn Grothman was playing rock and roll on Wart. But the weird thing about Devin Nunes is he seems like the kind of guy who wakes up in the morning and says, what am I going to do today? Or how am I going to serve today? Or even how do I feel today? It's like, he says, what would Donald Trump want me to do today? I don't think Trump even has to say to Devin Nunes, oh, you should do this, or somebody has to give him it. I think he just literally sits around and says, oh, I better start doing this because it'll help Mr. Trump.
I think he's kind of built his career around Sean Hannity.
Or worse, yeah.
Or worse. Well, I don't think it gets too much worse.
I'm just going to tell you, I think Devin Nunes is the kind of guy who aspires to be on Hannity. Right? That's like his goal. But, sometimes he has to, he has to settle for Mark Levin or whatever.
Mark Levin. You pronounce it Levin. Yeah.
Levin.
Uh-huh.
Levin.
All right. With his constitutional convention. All right. You brought up impeachment. Here is Delaware Senator Chris Coons yesterday on with Chuck Todd and Meet the Press.
I'm not calling for the president's impeachment at this point because I don't think we've seen the sorts of evidence that would justify it at this point. And I frankly, I'm a political realist. It's a Republican-controlled House and Senate. Impeachment won't move forward unless there is something that shocks the conscience of the average American and persuades a majority of Republicans that this president has committed high crimes and misdemeanors. I think it is premature for us to even discuss that.
Well, it's a good thing we haven't seen anything that shocks the conscience.
I was going to say, it's sort of like, I was kind of shocked by Charlottesville. What about you?
Yeah.
Just to give you an example and the president's response to it, that was kind of shocking to my conscience. I thought the firing of the head of the FBI.
Yeah, that was shocking.
Kind of shocking to your conscience. The lawless assaults on immigrants and refugees, things of that nature, constant. It's a little bit, at least, unsettling. The fact that these guys literally have staffed the federal government with, a crew of grifters that they're like, you wouldn't want near, like a Quick Mart, cash register.
You apologize to the people that wait on us when we're getting our Slurpees.
No, I'm saying that they wouldn't let these people work there. The people who are doing our Slurpees are a far more responsible set of people.
Yeah, I understand where Senator Coons is coming from. They believe, for every action, there's a reaction, and that if Democrats are viewed to be overreaching, that there will be, that it will motivate Republicans, right?
you know, there are a lot of people like that back in 1776, right? You know, and everybody's like going, "Well, we got to take on the king." And by all accounts, you know, a substantial portion of Americans are like, "The king might get mad at us," you know, or it might not go so well. At a certain point, you know, I mean, it is confusing. Do you do this? Do you do that? What strategy? What tactic do you apply? And usually I've found that when you're in a situation like that, the proper response is to do the right thing, right? Do what you know to be right and appropriate. And yes, it is true. Sometimes there will be blowback. There will be political challenges. But it is comic for Senator Coons, who I write about in my book very positively. He did some terrific work on especially the Scott Pruitt nomination, things like that, when they're fighting it on the floor of the Senate. But and that's an absurd statement by him.
You know,
I find it hard to imagine that he could, you know, get those words out.
You know, maybe I shouldn't bring this up because he took a lot of bad votes. But the late Senator Howell Heflin showed that type of courage, representing a very conservative state, voting against Jeff Sessions to become a federal judge, voting against Robert Bork, voting against Clarence Thomas.
Yeah.
There were moments where you literally just, you had to do the right thing.
Well, and also on this one.
Doug Jones refusing to lie or couch his view on abortion. That was a pretty courageous thing to do.
Well, it's also something, there's something else here too, as regards the impeachment power specifically. Are people who are advocating for impeachment saying, yeah, you got to advocate, you know, you got to put down the, you know, resolutions, you have to do the articles of impeachment, because as soon as you do, Congress is going to pass it. No. It's hard. We know that. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, if you do not say at this point, at the very least, as a bare minimum, forget about everything that's happened before, if you don't say at this point, if Donald Trump fires Mueller to shut this investigation down, that's an impeachable offense. If you don't say that, if you kind of keep always backing away from it and couching it, you're never signaling to Trump what's in play here.
I have a naive question to ask, and I really don't know the answer to this. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But some of the actions, some of these members of Congress, you know, what Devin Nunes is allegedly doing, and some others, could they be eventually charged with some conspiracy to obstruct justice?
It's very hard. A member of Congress acting in their official capacity, where they're not taking a bribe or, you know, explicitly obstructing justice, where they literally say, you know, here's how we're going to lie and do these things.
Well, look at those trips to the White House.
I understand what you're saying. I'm just telling you, it's very hard. Obstruction of justice is a tough, it's a tough charge to get against someone who will be able to argue I was doing what I believed was my duty as a member of Congress or whatever. I know what you're asking. It's an appropriate ask. Generally, the standard is this for members of the House and Senate. The standard is that it's the voters who are supposed to apply the justice, right, at election time. Where you cross that line is where you have bribes, where you have, you know, clearly stated, you know, recordings of conspiracies and things of that. And you go back to, like, something most
people... Abscam.
I was just going to say, Abscam is the example of that. And even all of them didn't get held to account.
Right.
Necessarily. But what I would tell you is this. What's going on now in Congress is such an offensive assault on the rule of law and on respect for the Constitution itself, to my mind, again, circling back, this is why it's appropriate for Democrats to raise impeachment, because it puts it on the line. It says, you know, here's, this guy's clearly done this stuff. Shouldn't we hold him to account? Then if Republicans don't do so, they are clearly called out on this. I think leaving it in the gray area, again, what Senator Coons did, as somebody, again, who's done a lot of good work in the Senate, but when you leave it in the gray area, I think you leave too much space for Republicans to say, oh, this is just a political debate.
I got to wrap it up. John Nichols, Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays.
Yeah.
And Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas. All right. You have a great day. Sly'sOffice.com brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.